This is WMUK's Let's Hear It, Music of the Moment in West Michigan. I'm Kara Lawrence. Thanks for coming along. Born to a physicist father, Taylor Eigsti grew up in California and began playing piano at a very early age. He finally found a music teacher who encouraged his love of jazz, and soon he was performing internationally and recording his first album. Now just in his 30s, Taylor Eigsti has decades of personal connections and musical experience he'll be bringing to the Gilmore International Keyboard Festival in two shows at Bell's Eccentric Cafe today. Both shows are sold out. Tickets may become available closer to show time. When I spoke to Taylor Eigsti a couple of weeks ago, I asked about the last time he was in Kalamazoo.
Well, I know I played there once years ago as part of the Gilmore Festival. That was with my trio at the time, which would have included Jason Lewis on drums and John Shiplett on bass. I don't know what year that would have been. Maybe 2004? Maybe 2003 even? Something like that. But it was a long time ago.
My eyes just found it in this paragraph in the Gilmore brochure. It was 2002, and you were 17 years old.
Wow. Okay. Well, yeah, I was close. It's also possible that we were doing a gig in Michigan and drove by a billboard for the Gilmore Festival, and I remembered, I think we drove by a billboard that had Robert Glasper on it, and we called Robert in the car, and we're like, you're on a billboard. That might have been in 2006 or 7 or something like that, maybe 7 or 8 even. But
I guess it does all kind of blend together. I mean, even when you were 17, you'd already been gigging for 4 or 5 years at that point, right?
Yeah, I really started performing when I was 8 years old and kept it going. I really started playing piano when I was 4 years old, but then started actually performing when I was about 8. And I just fell in love with that whole thing. I was driving around somewhere with my dad, and I asked him when I was 8 years old, my favorite pianist at the time, David Benoit, I asked my dad, I was like, how much does David have to pay each time he performs? And he's like, well, you get paid to do this. And I'm like, oh, really? And so I kind of made my career choice right then and there. I didn't know that you could actually, do this for a career. I just thought it looked so fun. So that's really what kind of initially drew me into the concept of that.
Have you ever been in danger of burning out?
Yeah, definitely. You know, it's so funny because, you know, I travel every year. I'm gone probably anywhere from 200 to 250 days out of the year on tour or traveling for different gigs. And sometimes it really does, you know, it's hard to manage life and everything else in the midst of traveling a lot and that sort of thing. And it's funny because on the outside, a lot of people could see this glamorous, oh, well, you're in Paris today and then you're in whatever. But it's not like I'm sitting there, you know, enjoying like amazing pasta overlooking the water and just relaxing for a couple of days. It's like we're flying into the airport, getting stuck in traffic, getting to the hotel, getting, you know, and trying to check into the hotel, finding out the rooms aren't ready, taking a 20-minute neck hurting nap in the lobby. And then, like, you know, going straight to the gig only to find out they don't have the right equipment or whatever. And then, like, do the gig and then wake up really early at 5 a.m. the next morning to get on two connecting flights to the next place or whatever. And people are, in the meantime, if I put it up on social media, you know, then people are like, oh, you have to try this restaurant in Paris or, oh, lucky you and stuff. So I'm like, well, you know, I'm not exactly at the Eiffel Tower with champagne right now. You know, it's a part of the job of being a touring musician. And a lot of those situations can be pretty taxing and they can be pretty, they can make it very challenging to kind of balance the rest of life and everything else. And especially given that I've gone through, my sister passing away, my dad passing away, and like good friends, you know, leaving and all sorts of different things and going through a divorce and everything else. I actually feel like, you know, it really puts things in perspective of, you know, I'm happy to be a musician. I love doing this more than anything, and I'm really, really fortunate to be in situations of making music. But that being said, I think people are the most important thing. And so having a life where you have a family and people that you care about and managing how all of that goes is kind of more important sometimes than the music itself. And I think us as musicians, we have to sacrifice so much to actually be able to perform and play music and make music we want to make that, you know, occasionally we can lose perspective over what really is important. And, you know, sometimes in those situations, I mean, it's such an interesting question you ask because very few people actually directly ask that question, but I'd have to answer honestly that yeah, sometimes I'm like, what if I just had like a desk job or something, or if I could just go work 9 to 5 and then, you know, go take a vacation, take time off and all this kind of stuff. And so I have to kind of find a way to balance it. It is really challenging, but I think ultimately I still wouldn't trade it for anything else. The best of worlds is to be able to consider it as traveling with your friends, you know, which is, that's why I choose to only make music with people that I get along with. And I feel like life's too short to, I don't care how good the musician is, I don't want to travel or be a part of making music with people that I don't get along with as people, because ultimately you're on a field trip with all your buddies. And sometimes in those moments where you feel burnt out or whatever else, that's all you have. You're like, well, we're all out here together, you know?
Exactly. That was one of the, you know, from where I'm sitting and trying to pick up a few clues about your career and your life and what makes you tick, I do see the same collaborators over and over and over again. And I think that's one of the smart things Taylor's done to keep going with this.
Yeah. And I think it's just one of those things where you get to know people that I think that, you know, and I do a lot of teaching when I can, just in master classes or clinics, or I pick usually one day out of the month to teach lessons at home in New York, which actually is what I'm doing today. This is, but I tell people too that when you're comping, when you're playing behind someone, you know, that's a social art form. So, you know, if I'm good friends with the singer and I know what they laugh at, and you know, and I have conversations with them, and you know the ebb and flow of that, then it's easier to accompany someone because you know the places to butt in, the places to let them have the, you know, take the lead and all of that kind of stuff. So it's when you get to know people personally, I think that you play music with them better, you know. And for instance, the trio that I'm bringing to Kalamazoo, Eric Harland and Harish Raghavan, those are two of my best friends in the world. And they've been a part of my trio for ages. I've played with both of them for 10 plus years. We all play together in Eric Harland's group, Voyager, and we actually all play together in Harish Raghavan's group, but he rarely, he doesn't do as many gigs with his group these days yet, but when we do, it's the same rhythm section. So sometimes you just find those couple of people that you're like, well, we all really see eye to eye as people. We get along great. We can read each other's minds to some degree, we, you know, all that kind of stuff. And so those are the people you really want to have in your band and make music with. And there's the most, you know, sense of love and forgiveness too, of just like, if you're having a day where you're going through something and whatever else, or something happens musically, you know, you're building up trust. And I think that's really important in the groups that I play in. I think there always should be a lot of trust. And that's when the best music is made is, and I can tell too, when I'm watching some musicians, I'm like just in awe of, you know, I know that they must be such close friends, or, you know, that sort of a thing. I was doing a masterclass once in London, and there was a group of students playing, and I asked them afterwards, you know, it just wasn't really, they didn't seem like they were listening to each other. And I asked them, have you guys all had lunch together? And they were like, well, no. And then I took a one step further and I asked the guitarist, I was like, what's the drummer's name? And he couldn't even tell me, you know, so but I was like, see, that's, for me, the biggest thing is the relationship with people as friends. That has to go hand in hand with making music together. And the cool thing about, you know, music is you can play, and jazz music is you can make music with anyone, and you can meet a lot of new friends and explore like that. But it's the same, it works the same as having a conversation with someone you've never met before and that sort of thing. So it's all kind of a fascinating process, but those are the things that make me feel like really lucky to be able to do it and to be able to see life from the perspective of being a musician and traveling in bands with people.
Now, knowing that you and Harish and Eric have played and played and played and must have quite the set list by this point, I'm I'm gonna guess that the 6:30 show and the 9 o'clock show are very likely to be different from each other.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I think that you know, there's people have different perspectives on this, and I respect all differences of opinion here. But you know, if I'm gonna go do a show someplace, even if it's a different audience and there's two shows, for the sake of all of us in the band, we're going to play different stuff. So, I mean, you know, there's always, especially if it's the same audience, you know, I've done some gigs sometimes in some people's bands where it's the same audience, but they're like, well, it's, you know, we're just going to repeat a tune or two. And I'm very, as far as my own groups go, I'm very personally against that. I think that it's a really, really treasured opportunity to make music in front of people and explore and try to, you know, play something that's new and you know, reach something cool inside the music. And by playing different music all throughout the night, that's the best way to get in touch with that, I truly feel. So if people come to the 6:30 show, I don't know exactly how it works there at Bell's, I think is the name of the, but you know, if people come to one show, they'll definitely hear different stuff, different tunes entirely, and different treatment of whatever than they would on the other show.
Give me one song that you have recorded that you think might show up on one of the sets so that I can share it with listeners now.
Well, I think there's a good chance that we'll play. We're actually going to use this as an opportunity to try out a lot of new music too, which is going to be kind of fun. But I think we'll definitely do at least some music from Daylight at Midnight, which is the last album that both Harish and myself and Eric were all on. It was the last record that I released. But we'll probably do some songs like Speaking Song, or probably the one that I'm pretty sure that we'll do is Magnolia. And that's a song that I wrote together with vocalist Becca Stevens. But I'm sure we'll at least be doing Magnolia for sure.
Okay, well, it's time to let you go. Let's see. The following day, you could stick around and see Sullivan Fortner Trio, or Ingrid Fleeter playing Chopin, or a medievalist musician on the clavicembalum, Corina Marti. Does any of that sound exciting?
Absolutely, and I'll say that too. That Sullivan is a pianist that I've known for a while and heard over time that I just really, really respect. I think he's one of the great young pianists out there, and I would encourage anyone to go check his group out. That'd be a great show. I always love hearing Sullivan. And yeah, I wish I could stick around that next day, but we'll be going on to California and kind of a part of a little mini tour then. But yeah, really, really looking forward to it.
I spoke with jazz pianist Taylor Eigsti, whose performance at the Gilmore International Keyboard Festival is co-sponsored by Fontana. The shows are sold out. Tickets may become available at the door. Full details at thegilmore.org. Here's Magnolia, co-written with Becca Stevens on vocals, from the album Daylight at Midnight.
On a hill, on its own, stands one magnolia. Now the branches reach higher than last spring. Each white bloom